India's first technology-enabled virtual QSR, which delivers affordable gourmet food to you within 40 minutes.
We want to provide consistent food at all times to all consumers, right? So it doesn't matter whether a consumer is sitting in Kolkata or he's sitting in Delhi or he's sitting in Bombay. The taste of the burger remains constant and remains same throughout.
Before we actually started executional processes on the operation side of it, we were brainstorming on the fact that, hey, you know what? Could we even call ourselves a gourmet brand?
How are you guys bringing consistency into gourmet and creating an enhanced experience?
We want to build a business which is not restricted to only a niche set of consumers, but we want to build a business which has high repeat volumes. So we want to empower micro and small sized businesses as well as new generation entrepreneurs to become a part of a high growth chain ecosystem without having to bear the brunt of high capital expenditure, high cognitive load required for management, and high intellectual capital required to grow.
Anti-sell yourself. Give me 5 ways that things go wrong for the kitchen. And give me 6 ways that things go wrong for you.
Okay, so
this is Nidhar and me, and we are building BTR Kitchen Company. What we aim to build with BTR is India's first technology-enabled virtual QSR, which delivers affordable gourmet food to you within 40 minutes. You can imagine some sort of a Domino's, but for affordable gourmet food. The differentiation that we bring in compared to a Domino's, there are multifolds of differentiation, which is, I have to talk about one part of it, wherein we generate value for the entire food and beverage ecosystem as a whole, compared to not only generating value for our business, where we partner with existing kitchens who are struggling to do business and who are struggling to earn money because of underutilization of their current capacities inside their kitchens. We partner with them and we provide them with our brand. We provide them with our technology. We provide them with all associated inventory costs as well as with the orders. And for every order which our partners or these pods assemble and dispatch for us, we pay them a commission value. Now, understandably, because they're not spending any money for processing these orders, because we are bearing the entire cost of operations, this is pure profits for them. So that is where we actually step in and we say that we are creating value for the entire ecosystem and not only for us as a company, while we create a consumer-facing brand. So Nidhar and me, we both have been in the food tech industry for a decently long amount of time. So I have been a part of Swiggy for the past over 6 years now, till about earlier this year. And before that, I was a chef with the Oberoi Group. And Nidhar and me, we also met at Swiggy, where Nidhar used to look into the regional finance for East, Central and North India. And I used to look into categories back then for the same reasons. And, you know, while interacting with so many restaurant partners, so our work was to grow the businesses of restaurant partners, right? Because that is what would bring about growth for Swiggy as a whole. We interacted with hundreds of merchants across the country to understand, hey, you know what? What are the problems you are facing? How can we help you grow? So we were basically growth advisors for small business. And back in 2017-18, Swiggy thai sirf 7 shaharon mein. So, you know, there were small businesses whom we had to onboard, whom we really had to go to the grassroots level to understand what problems they had. And again, me being from particularly from the core kitchen background, I understood what are the problems which is faced in a kitchen scenario, which is the same ecosystems that are used today are dated 100 years old. There are problems with scaling up conventional kitchen systems and, you know, very high reliance on manpower, attrition of skilled manpower also. So about 75% of the entire Southeast Asian ecosystem for commercial kitchens are underutilized. If you particularly talk for India, that figure even goes up higher. So if I take an example, you probably have a kitchen, which can be a cafe or a cloud kitchen or anything, which has the capacity to do, let's say, 100 orders a day. You have invested in your rent, you pay your staff salary, you maintain your stocks. Along with that, you're also paying aggregator commissions. And let's say you're capable of doing 100 orders a day, but you end up doing 20 or 30 orders a day. That is the underutilization that we're talking about. That is where actually we step in and we help you optimize on the investments that you have made in your kitchen by providing a full stack end-to-end brand and operational toolkit where there is no cognitive load of management involved, where there is no risk of inventory involved. Aapko kuch karna hi nahi hai. So that is a part of the solution that we are building for the merchant ecosystem.
The entire ecosystem is something which is 100 years old, dated, right? Till today, people cook on fire. They use skilled manpower, and it's more a judgment process rather than an SOP-driven process, right? That's where the entire food tech that we have incorporated comes into place, wherein we do not use or we do not cook over fire. We do not incorporate guesswork into the entire process, right? It's everything is formulated, everything is SOP-driven. So purists of food would think that this is something which is blasphemy for the industry, because a lot of the food depends on the kind of person who's going to cook it and the kind of food and the kind of guesstimation that that person can bring in. But that's where we differ. That's where we want to differ, because we want to provide consistent food at all times to all consumers, right? So it doesn't matter whether a consumer is sitting in Kolkata or he's sitting in Delhi or he's sitting in Bombay. The taste of the burger remains constant and remains same throughout, right? And that is because of the food tech that gets involved. So the kind of techniques like low temperature, low time cooking, things like using sous vide machines, things like using vacuum sealed bags or vacuum immersion techniques to cook your food, which basically weeds out the requirement of a skilled manpower, is something that basically differentiates us from our conventional kitchen and provides consistent gourmet quality food to the consumer. So yeah, that's what we are trying to do, and that's what we want to build on in the future.
I want to deep dive into this word, the word gourmet. I see it so many times, I don't even know what it means. What is gourmet food?
Akhil, you have preempted my question. Literally, when I met Anish, this was the first thing I asked him. I was like, Anish, if someone asked me today, what is gourmet food? I don't think I could define it. I probably know the way it looks, but I don't think I can give an idea of what is gourmet food. So let's first address that.
Yeah, so this is actually a very interesting question, because before we actually started building out what we are building right now, and before we actually started, executional processes on the operation side of it, we were brainstorming on the fact that, hey, you know what, should we even call ourselves a gourmet brand? And, what defines gourmet? And Nidhar and me, well, we did extensively debate and discuss on what is called gourmet. And the best part is we just entered a rabbit hole. Now, the reason why over here is because if you ask this question to Nidhar, if you ask this question to me, and if you ask this question to Akhil, three of us might have three very different answers, based on what our experiences of food has been, based on what our experiences in life have been, and based on the exposure that we have to finesse in life, right? So if I say that maybe going to a Michelin star restaurant for me is gourmet food, but for our target group of consumers, who's, let's say, a 23-year-old college graduate just starting off his first job, for him, let's say, going to an ITC for an a la carte dinner will be gourmet food, right? So there really is a spectrum when we talk about gourmet food in India. There is no benchmark. However, as far as BTR is concerned, what we mean when we say gourmet is certain very basic organoleptic and nutritional properties that we maintain. If I take an example over here, let's say you order in a KFC chicken bucket, right? And this KFC chicken bucket reaches you, and let's say you're watching a match and you're enjoying that bucket. By the time you're down to the last piece of chicken, which probably is an hour and a half after you had received the order, there will be a stark difference in textural quality of the meat product. This same problem will be there across any other food product. Changes in food happen with respect to how much of time the food is left cold, with respect to how much of time the food is left hot. Our food remains texture stable and shelf life stable irrespective of the amount of time that you actually keep it out cold. So the meat, for instance, in this example, does not become tough. It is actually much more juicier, right? And the organoleptic property with respect to the texture of the food on the outside is also much better. compared to a regular KFC. Now, that is a texture part of it.
You know, I'm going to ask you this. What is organoleptic? Like, it is such a fancy... Okay. Don't trap us in words, man. We are idiots. Me and Vishru are stupid, stupid people. We don't want words. We want meanings. So let's go with organoleptic.
Organoleptic basically means the textural attributes of food. It can be crispiness, chewiness, tenderness, moisture. So whatever relates to the texture of a food is called the organoleptic properties of food. So if you want to build a category, there are two broad segments that we look at. One is assortment and the other is availability. We want to target gourmet in both these segments, where we have an assortment of food which is differentiated at a similar price point to mass-produced brands. If I take an example of assortment over here, sure, on our menu, you will find a fried chicken burger because fried chicken burgers have a huge uptake in the TG that we serve in. But instead of having a regular KFC burger, which has one slice of lettuce and, you know, some mayo drizzled and sprinkled here and there on top, what you find with us is, let's say, a multigrain bun with a texture-stable patty of fried chicken wrapped in a tonkatsu sauce topped with an aged kimchi. At the same price segment or a similar price segment as to what you would have paid for a KFC burger.
So, just getting this clear, gourmet is everyone's or anyone, any one particular person's definition of what they would call a nice dinner.
Gourmet would be a slightly more elevated experience than what you would otherwise call nice only.
Yeah, so, matlab, if there's this chef who has spoken in terms of the what a gourmet food is, from a layman's perspective, for me, a gourmet food is just two things, right? So, anything that elevates my experience, as Anish just said, I am used to having, as mentioned, a fried chicken burger. If I get complimentary flavors and if I am able to enjoy that food as compared to what I'm getting very easily around myself, that for me becomes gourmet, because complimentary flavors is something that elevates my experience, number one. And number two is the kind of texture that I'm able to enjoy. So most of the times what happens is that if I get food, be it veg, non-veg, paneer, chicken, whatever, usually if it's paneer, it'll start to crumble. If it's chicken, it'll start to get dry, right? And if I am eating that food after, say, an hour and a half, and if I'm still getting that juiciness or if I'm still getting that firmness in terms of paneer, I think that's gourmet food for me, right? So it's more from a person's experience perspective. It's more from what they are able to get out of that particular food. And it's definitely more from a perspective of an elevated experience as compared to maybe what you get easily around.
There's a massive movement going on in the West. It's called the five ingredient movement. So what that means is that when you look at packaged food, when you look at the ingredients of the packaged food, if there are less than five ingredients of the packaged food, it is good food. Otherwise, there are too many SOC1992 #341 compound TSC blah, 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 right? If I don't understand that, I would not like to consume it. So when you talk about juiciness of the food being sustained or my bread being stable, how are you achieving that? And are you using such compounds in your food?
So two parts to it. One is the names that you took, the INS numbers and the names that you took, right? And the other part is how are we achieving what we are achieving? So I'll take an example of a real product that we have, okay? So our products have a shelf life stability of 6 times more compared to what Indian food standards say, which is acceptable, right? Without the need for freezing food. Now, I'll just take a step back and just try to explain myself over here. So FASAI, which is the Food Regulatory Body of India, they say that, sure, if you freeze food, you can store it up to 6 to 8 months in a freezer. That is 0 to minus 18 degrees centigrade. But if you chill food, that is stored between 0 to 4 degrees centigrade, you've got to discard it within 4 days of time. And again, there are further nuances over here. under our products, even though we do not freeze food, why we don't freeze food? Because these organoleptic properties that we were talking about, they start getting affected the moment you freeze. I'll take a real example. What is meat made up of? What are vegetables made up of? They're made up of cells, right? And what are cells made up of? They're made up of water. So the moment you freeze water, water expands. And the moment water expands, these cells, they break, right? And they release the water. That aids in the degradation of the quality of food. It basically spoils things faster. If you keep any dry thing in a moist place, it gets bad quickly. For instance, fungus gets bad quickly, right? Similarly, there's also nutritional loss. So we do not freeze any of our food products, yet the shelf life is 6 times more than what FSSAI says, that is 4 days. How do we do that? Our protein yields are 85% or above. When I say protein yields, what it means is, let's say you buy 1 kilo of meat from the market, 1,000 rupees mein. The moment you cook that 1 kilo of meat, it shrinks to 500 or 550 grams. So now you are paying 1,000 rupees for 500 gram of meat or 550 gram of meat. Uske upar aap apna pricing karte ho. Uske upar aap apna customer ko saman bechte ho, which we call food cost. For us, this is the yield. This is 50-50% hota hai yield. For us, ye yield hai 80-85% ki upar. Now, how are we achieving this, right? How are we achieving the shelf life? How are we achieving this yield? Now, if I take an example of fire, there are two ways to put out fire, right? Either you pour water on it, or you pour sand on it, and the fire goes out. And the other way is you take the oxygen out of the air, and the fire extinguishes, right? The example that you took of INS numbers and INS figures, these are certain preservatives which may be biologically, I would say, naturally obtained, or which may be produced in a factory. This is the former, where you put in external ingredients to actually improve the shelf life of the products. For us, it is the latter, where we remove the presence of certain things to actually increase our shelf life and to push our yields. Okay, so in our products, you would not find any of these preservatives, right? That is where we say that we use vacuum immersion, because there are certain... So food products spoil because of the presence of oxygen, because bacteria thrives in oxygen. Then there are bacteria which thrive, which are anaerobic bacteria also, which thrive in the absence of oxygen also, right? So then it comes to the fact that how quickly or how effectively are you storing the food? And it's not only about how effectively are you storing the food, it's also about how quickly are you cooling the food down, right? So for instance, FSSAI says that you would cool food down in 12 hours. Under our techniques, we cool food down in under 2 hours. So we don't work in tandem with what Indian standards say, because Indian standards are still about 100 years old. Our standards are synonymous to Australian and European and UK standards, but it is not one playbook or one rule book that we follow. We have developed a compound catering system, which is a mixture of different operating systems which are prevalent across multiple regions in the world, to come up with something which is a first of its kind and a first of its time. So yeah, in a nutshell, that is, you know, if I may answer your question. But also, there is something which people don't know. When you're talking about the five ingredient movement, there's a lot of loopholes behind this. These figures, as you stated, these are not green label preservatives. There is something called green label preservatives also. If you are using a green label preservative in your food product, you do not have to legally call it out that I'm using an INS or whatever, because they do not have INS codes, right? These are again naturally obtained preservatives which you can use in food products safely.
So, couple of things that I want to address. Firstly, we thank you for the sales pitch. We hope BTR Kitchen gets a lot of sales.
I hope too. Yeah.
Secondly, Nidhir mentioned consistency. Nidhir mentioned, he was like, you know, you guys are consistent. You're not, flavors are not varying. So that reminds me, there's this movie, Bradley Cooper was in it, I think it's called what? Fired or something like that. He's a burnt, there you go. So he's a chef and he has his sous chef with him, and they go to a Burger King and they're having a cheeseburger or a Whopper. And he's like, what's the difference in what we serve and what these guys are serving? So that lady goes, oh, it's a cheap cut of meat, it's quicker. He's like, no, it's consistency. Today, when you and I step into a Burger King or a KFC or a McDonald's or any of these QSRs, we know the kind of taste we're going to expect. However, we go to a Michelin star and we pay the amount for a Michelin star or any of these, you know, massive chefs, because there is an experience to it. There is a lack of consistency, as Bradley Cooper said. So how are you guys bringing consistency into gourmet and creating an enhanced experience?
Two things to it. Number one, the food technique that we are using, right? So the way we are cooking food, as mentioned earlier, right? And as Anish was mentioning in the previous point also. So what we do is basically have a vacuum immersion, a sous vide bath technique of cooking food, wherein you do not require, or we do not cook our food using fire as a medium. We cook our food using water as a medium, right? Water, fire has this problem statement wherein it's very difficult to control the exterior temperature when it comes to fire. But when it comes to water, you can maintain a single temperature when over there, right? That's what differentiates, and that's what makes us consistent in the sense that once you immerse any food in water, and if you set the temperature at, say, a 70 or a 72 degrees, it remains at a 70 or 72 degrees for the n number of hours that you want to cook the food in, right? If I cook it for 3 hours, 4 hours, and all my cuts when it comes to meat, or if it comes to anything else, if it's being cooked in a consistent temperature, the food, the final outcome of the food that is going to come out is going to be the same when it comes to the overall texture, when it comes to the overall moisture content that that food has, and the overall taste that that food is able to deliver, right? So that is one of the major reasons when we say that we do consistent food, because the manpower aspect of it is just not there, right? You immerse the entire thing into a sous vide bath, you set the temperature based on the research that you do, and you wait for the food to cook for that n number of hours, which is constant for all the cuts of meat or all the cuts of food that you do for that particular segment, right? So eventual outcome is going to be the same.
Doesn't that bring about another problem then? Because your value proposition is that the kitchens are unable to use so much of the resources that they already have in place. But then your cooking methods are restrictive to sous vide. So you would want the kitchen to have sous vide in the first place. Otherwise, they'll need another capital expenditure to get a sous vide machine.
Right. So, yeah. So, Akhil, that is where the entire system that we are talking about makes the difference, right? So what we do is basically divide our entire food into three parts, the L1s, the L2s, and the L3s, right? L1 and L2, the entire control remains in the production kitchen. Okay, so imagine a situation wherein you have a central production kitchen and you're serving like 10 outlets with that production kitchen, right? The L1, which is your raw materials, your prep, your initial mise en, is all done through the L1. It's controlled within the production kitchen, and the L2, which is close to around 80 to 85% of the food being cooked, is also done in the production kitchen, right? What we do, as Anish was saying, because we have such high shelf lives, right? And because we use techniques wherein we do not freeze the food, what we do is we quick chill the food and we package it and we send it out to our partner kitchens, right? The whole thing that the partner kitchen needs to do is just store it in that temperature of 0 to 4 degrees, which any normal refrigerator will be able to do, right? Just whenever the order comes, he or she just needs to tear a packet, use the overall impeachment assembly kitchen machine that we've developed, just put the food inside it, press a few couple of buttons, and the food will come out prepared, right? So from an effort perspective or from a capital expenditure perspective, the assembly kitchen does not need to care, right? Because he or she already has that kind of refrigeration, etc. So from a capital expenditure perspective, he or she did not understand what the recipe is. He or she need not understand how to operate a sous vide machine, etc. Because everything is done in-house at the production facility. And you just pass on the 80-85% cooked food to the partner. He cooks it and he just delivers it.
I'll just add in a couple of things over there, which is coming on my mind. So when we were, when we were doing the research for how can we elevate the experiences, we were very clear on one thing. That we want to build a business which is not restricted to only a niche set of consumers, but we want to build a business which has high repeat volumes. Now, that is the category. So we immersed with about 200-250 odd consumers during our consumer profiling phase to understand, hey, you know, what is sort of food that you want, what is sort of food that you can afford to eat in 3 to 5 times in a month. And a lot of these, you know, consumer insights actually came in, and we got to understand that our positioning, while can be gourmet, but should also be affordable gourmet. So to answer your question in a different way, that how are we maintaining consistency while producing gourmet? We're not saying that we will deliver a Michelin dish to you. What we are saying is the sort of dish that you would sit at a fine dine or let's say a casual dine restaurant and experience it while having it just out of the kitchen, we will deliver that experience to you even after 40 minutes when the food reaches you, or even after 30 minutes when the food reaches. What we have developed is a continuous phase alteration system which alters the cook cycles and the temperature cycles depending upon what you put inside that batch. So let's say, Akhil, even if you were to stay in our production kitchen today, you just need to press a button and the food gets immersed. And automatically after the cook phase is over, it goes into a phase where the food is chilled and then into a phase where the food is stored. And all of this is integrated into that one system, right? And after this is done, this is already packaged, right? So it is transported via cold supply chain to your assembly partner. And as Nidhir was explaining, the assembly partner has to do nothing. We provide them with two equipments. One is the final assembly equipment and the other is the chilling equipment. And we take up about 30 square foot of space, only about 20 or 30 square foot of space in the assembly pods. Unko bas ek touch screen mein ye button dabana hai and they just insert, the machine prompts, you know what, insert the burger bread. After 20 seconds, it prompts insert the patty, for instance, in this example. And in about 2.5 minutes, the food comes out ready. So that is how we maintain the constancy at the assembly pod, where there is no food prep that's happening over there.
But then you don't need a kitchen.
Yeah, correct. You don't need a kitchen. But again, for us, we don't want to build a kiosk, right? Because there is where we want to step in and say that, hey, you know what? Our operational expenditure for launching a hyperlocal brand is minimal because we are not spending behind these pods. It's the partners who are paying us money. We have a vision of democratizing and revolutionizing how the traditional franchising system works in India, wherein in traditional franchising, you pay 25 to 30 lakh rupees and goes up to 3 to 5 CR upfront. And the payback happens in, let's say, a 3 to 5 year time, depending upon where your storefront is located. Plus, you pay 8 to 10% royalty. Plus, you hire your own staff. Plus, your inventory costs. Plus, your management fees and all of that, right? We are saying that our check size for opening a pod is in the 5 to 7 lakh segment. Which otherwise, even if you want to open up a simple cloud kitchen, a professional one, you end up paying 15 to 20 lakh rupees licensing ka kharcha, manpower kharcha, equipment kharcha. Apne liye, this is about 5 to 7 lakh rupees. And we will pay you back in terms of ROI within a span of 10 to 12 months, right? So we want to empower micro and small sized businesses as well as new generation entrepreneurs to become a part of a high growth chain ecosystem without having to bear the brunt of high capital expenditure, high cognitive load required for management, and high intellectual property and high intellectual capital required to grow. So yeah, it's a hassle-free process for small businesses.
Anish, I'm a little cynical, huh? So this picture you're painting, it's not, something is seeming too good to be true.
Because it is good, yeah.
No, I mean, I hope it is as good as you say it is. I mean, I really, really like, I hope that's the case. And if that's the case, I mean, I think we're sitting on a gold mine here. However, couple of questions. So first, you said the kitchens are underutilized, right? What their capacity is, they're not matching that capacity. Then you're saying you're taking up 30 square feet where you're putting a pod where the kitchen has to do nothing but press a button. So how is that increasing or making the kitchen capable of its capacity? Because you're technically not using anything that the kitchen has to provide other than the fact that you're using their cooling services, obviously, that they have. They're storing the food you're giving them in their chilling chambers. And
no, we are only doing the chambers, chilling chambers.
Oh, so exactly. So then you're providing the chilling chambers also, and you're providing the place it's cooked also. So kitchen ka jo inherent capacity hai, where is that increasing or decreasing? That's as it is, na?
I think I can expand on the question. I think let's make it a little simpler to answer. Why should I not, being a kitchen, install your services? Anti-sell yourself. Give me 5 ways that things go wrong for the kitchen. 6 ways that things go wrong for the kitchen, and give me 6 ways that things go wrong for you as the kitchen. So let's have all the negatives in place, because costs are very important. And if we don't have any costs, then it is a pipe dream. So let's talk about it. Not money, other costs other than money.
Okay, so it's difficult to name six things, because I think we are too close to the problem to understand whether we'll be able to list down six things over there. But what could go wrong at the partners, or what? Why would they not be able to? Why would they not want to partner with us? Number one is, then we become competitors to their own brand. So that is one of the biggest problem statements over here. So anybody who is actually running a kitchen or a restaurant and who also wants to do business with us, right? And if he or she is also in the same category that they are operating in, as what we are now operating in, right? So it is like a direct competition to their own brand, right? So that is number one of the major problem statements that could happen for a partner, because a lot of the times there would be a clash when it comes to serving my order as compared to serving their own orders. And at those points of time, it would become difficult for the partner to actually prioritize us as compared to doing their own business. So that is one problem statement, right? Number two is, from a partner's perspective, is it could happen that due to the kind of demand that maybe we'll be able to generate in the future, it happens that we start to push more number of orders towards it. And in essence, it could happen that they become 100% our own partners as compared to doing their own business. So most of the people who are into the restaurant industry have that passion for food or want to build something in terms of food, right? Because it's a very time-consuming business when it comes to the entire scenario. And you need to have that kind of passion to be able to work on holidays also and Saturdays, Sundays to actually deliver food. Because when the rest of the world is taking a holiday, restaurants are always working, right? So if you don't have that passion, it's very difficult to run that. At times, what would happen is that they become 100% our own partners, and they do not do, or because their business is not doing that great, they lose out on that passion, right? So these are the two things that come to me when it comes to a problem statement. Number three is the money, but we won't discuss the money, because there is that 5 to 7 lakh investment that you need to do, right? Which becomes a barrier to entry, even though we are providing that franchisee restaurant to them at like five times less than the cost of what they would want to, that they would get for maybe a burger sitting or somewhere else. But having said that, 5 to 7 lakhs is also a huge amount for any, maybe a small restaurant or a medium-sized restaurant, right? So that could be one problem statement that maybe hinders a partner to become our partners and serve our brand in their own kitchen, right? What could go wrong from us is the first two points that resonate both from the partner's perspective and also from our perspective, that if they are not able to prioritize their orders at some times, especially during peak hours, or if they are not that passionate when it comes to food, or they close their outlet at any given day or any given point of time, and they prioritize certain other things as compared to doing their own business, then it becomes difficult for us, because the number of outlets that we launch is dependent on the kind of demand that the area is able to generate. You do not want to have oversupply as compared to what the demand is for any particular area, right? So that becomes one problem statement. Following the SOP. So sitting here right now, and I'm just being very honest over here, Anish and myself, we've gone through the entire SOP. We've made people go through the entire SOP. But there could be certain situations wherein he or she is not able to follow that entire SOP, right? Even though you dumb it down as much as possible, right? So that becomes a problem statement, because if you do not follow the SOP, then the consistency factor that we were talking about goes out for a toss, right? So these are the two or three problems that come to mind. Anish, if you would want to add something over there.
No, actually, you know, this reminds me of these conversations which we had, and, you know, the backlogs which we had created. I mean, just to give Akhil and Rishu with a bit of insight into what I'm saying. So, you know, for any, I would say for any entrepreneur who's obsessed about CX, and about building something, at least for Nidhir and me, one of the things which really drive us is consumer experience. And whatever we have built so far is centered around our users, right? So whatever processes, apps, SOPs, technology, it serves the core user needs. Now, who are our users over here? Our users are both the final consumers like you and me, and the restaurant owners who or cafe owners or whatever, whoever will be our pod partners. So while developing the initial MVP that we have right now, we had these discussions that, you know, what happens when there is an inflection point, when we are generating certain orders for the partner, जहाँ पे उसका भी ऑर्डर चल रहा है साइमल्टेनियसली किचन, बिकॉज उसका स्टाफ तो है दो ही, पहले उसका स्टाफ यूटिलाइज नहीं हो रहा था बिकॉज उसके पास भाई दिन में ही आ रहे थे 10, 12, 15 ऑर्डर, उसके ऊपर हम भी उसको अभी दे रहे हैं 20, 25, 30 ऑर्डर. अब वॉट हैपन्स कि अगर लंच पीक में, विच इज यूजली फूड डिलीवरी ऑफर्स ऑपरेशन पीक्स राइट, सो वॉट हैपन्स ड्यूरिंग लंच पीक, सडनली वो खुद का रेस्टोरेंट में एक मार्केटिंग कैंपेन चलाया स्विगी में एंड उसके पास घुस गया 20 ऑर्डर राइट, एंड हमारे में भी चल रहा है 20 ऑर्डर, हो गया 40 ऑर्डर एंड ही ओनली हैज 2 स्टाफ, देन व्हाट डज ही डू? सो दीज वर अ फ्यू द प्रॉब्लम्स वी हैड डिस्कस्ड. सो द आंसर टू दिस इज व्हाट इज देयर इन आवर बैकलॉग्स, वेयर वी बिल्ड अ लोड मैनेजमेंट सिस्टम ऑन आवर एंड, वेयर इन वी टेक अ सर्टेन वॉल्यूम गारंटी फ्रॉम पार्टनर्स एंड फ्रॉम रेस्टोरेंट्स, एंड यू नो व्हाट, एट योर पीक, एट योर बेस्ट लेवल, एट योर कैपेसिटी, हाउ मेनी ऑर्डर्स कैन यू डू? And let's say, Akhil, he tells us that, okay, we can do 30 orders a day. 30 orders simultaneously, we can operate at the same time. Very high volume, maine bol diya, but just a ballpark figure. The moment the 31st order is provided or hits the order management system, we route it to the nearest possible outlet, because remember that we are a hyperlocal grid. So at any one point in time, a consumer has at least 2 outlets serviceable. So in a 4-kilometer consumer cluster that we have, we aim to maintain at least 1.5 serviceable outlets. So imagine 2 consumer clusters hai, 4-4 kilometer ka consumer clusters hai, beech ka jo ven hoga na, usko dono outlets se dikhega, from zone A as well as zone B. To agar zone A ka ek outlet ke paas capacity hit ho gaya, to outlet will automatically read out the order, the system will automatically read out the order to zone B. That's one way of answering the question. But it will be a problem for us in the initial days where there's a lot of manual and stuff which Nidhar and me will need to do, which we are doing in any case till the time we reach that scale. But yeah, that is one of the problems. And aise karke aur bhi 2-3 problems jo Nidhar ne bataya aapko, we have it in our backlogs. But yeah,
this generates another issue, and I feel like how many outlets do you have, or do you not have it started yet?
No, so we launched our MVP. It's about 3 months that we are operating, 3.5 months. We launched a production facility and we launched an assembly facility, both wholly owned by us.
Okay, so I'll give you the example. So there's this chain called Mr. Beast Burger. Mr. Beast Burger became a very popular chain within a year in the US. And why it became that is because the person who owns Mr. Beast Burger is Mr. Beast, and he's, I think, the largest individual YouTuber on YouTube, right? So he had a lot of customer base coming in from the beginning. What he would do is he would use cloud kitchens to build Mr. Beast Burgers, give them a recipe. And it was kind of like your thing, but with a lot more human error, which was built into that. But then the cloud kitchen was competing with Mr. Beast Burgers because they had to sell their own things. How he fixed that is he improved the margins for the Mr. Beast Burgers, so that when you look at per product margin, you will get equal amount of money per product with Mr. Beast Burger that you would get with selling your own product. So then the competition kind of fades away, because at the end of the day, it's about money and I'm getting the same amount of money. So let's talk money. If I sell your burger, or if I sell your butter chicken, and if I sell my burger or my butter chicken, where do I make more money?
Okay. Let's look at it from this perspective, and it depends on restaurants, depends on the cuisine, etc. Let's take an example of a burger itself. In the current market scenario, if you're doing online delivery, you end up making close to around 15-20% for each order that you do, or your own orders, right? A net operating margin of around 15-20%, right? For us, it would be close to around 10-12%. Okay, so we are pretty close to what they would earn if they want to just do their own orders. Number two, the point that I would want to focus over here is we would not want to compete with them in terms of we pushing our business and they are not able to doing their business, right? So the entire planning that we've done, or the entire perspective of what is the kind of restaurant partner that we would want to focus on would be that those restaurants who will be able to provide us with that kind of service and who complementarily also be able to run their business. We would not want to be a direct competitor to any restaurant partner that we partner with, right? So that's where the differentiating factor comes in. And also running your own restaurant wherein you are earning around 15-20% could be days wherein you're just earning 5%, 10%, or maybe even less than that. It could go into negative also because of wastages, because of maybe manpower problem statements, or because of the kind of raw material increase, price increase, or X number of macroeconomic factors, right? From us, you just need to give us like 5 to 7 minutes or maybe 10 minutes of your time to deliver one particular order, and you get a consistent 10% on every order. So the headache of managing the entire business, the headache of making sure that you have a concrete price levels for all raw materials, and the headache of managing and generating demand for your business just goes away, right? Because we take care of everything. You become a partner, you assemble that burger/dish for us, and we give you 10% irrespective of what the market scenarios is, or irrespective of what is the kind of problem statements that the market is facing, right? That is the differentiating factor when it comes to the partner.
I can understand the concept of I wish to be supplementary income for the restaurant, which has its own income. But the two words that follow this statement are for now. Because what you are trying to build, in my opinion, is you can leverage four things. You can leverage humans, you can leverage money, you can leverage code, and you can leverage content. Like Mr. Beast leveraged content, and based on that, he started leveraging capital, his money, which he would provide the cloud kitchens with. You guys are leveraging other people's capital via code. We are giving them a platform, we are giving them the materials, we are providing them everything, and all they need to do is they need to use their distribution networks to get our product out, which would allow you to scale faster than each individual location by themselves.
The distribution network is not owned by them. The distribution is decided by us.
So the distribution, what I mean by distribution is not just getting food to their houses, it's also to getting food to their states, to their cities, to their localities, to their pods, right? So when you're getting food there, then their crowd is the one that gets access to your food. Without them, that circle of crowd will not get access to your food in the first place, right?
Agreed.
So for now, it is that we are so small that we will be your supplementary income. In the future, it could be that we are the big boys in town and you have your product, which is your supplementary income, while you are feeding us more, which is a problem that you have spoken about. So that is something to think about. It is not a solution that we will come up on this podcast, because that is what company building is all about. Another issue I feel for you guys, which is just a brainstorming session now, is the perception. What if the perception about your food becomes that it is prepackaged food? Because when people get to discover that you are providing cooked food or semi-cooked food, and you are providing it to them in these pods where they are just pressing a button and the food is getting ready, the Indian consumer might view you as prepackaged food. So how will you guys dodge something like that, if that is a possibility?
Right. So, I mean, if I take an example of... Starbucks ka example lete. What Starbucks does is at any given point in time, or let's take CCD, or let's take Mongini's, or let's take Mio Amore, it all depends upon how you position your brand, right? How Starbucks operates, for instance, is it gets its food from... So Starbucks is owned by Tata, right, in India. So it gets all its food from Taj-owned bakeries. This can be a Taj Sats kitchen, or this can be a Taj hotel, right? And the food which they get is also pre-made. And they regenerate food in a similar fashion. If I take Swiggy private brands as an example, we used to cook food in central facilities, transport them to an assembly facility, which was again pre-packaged. If I take, especially post-COVID, how Retort as a technology grew, you must be knowing about ambient food or ambient. So I'll talk a bit about it. a lot of these restaurants today don't make their own gravies. They buy gravies which are pre-packaged in silver packaging from companies who make the gravies. So is that not pre-packaged food as well? So it depends upon how you are positioning the brand altogether.
I will add, absolutely it is. Hence, best-selling item in Starbucks is coffee. They are grinding fresh coffee and providing you with fresh coffee. While food is a supplement that, yes, we have it. If you want, you can eat it. Food comprises very little revenue for Starbucks. Same with CCD. Same with all of these things, right? But your primary product is that. And you are competing with them on the same shelf space as fresh product when you talk about Swiggy. I am not trying to attack you guys.
No.
I'm just trying to...
We're not feeling attacked also.
I'm just trying to brainstorm. I have a brainstorm session of if the perception is set that I can order fresh butter chicken or I can order BTR butter chicken. And my perception is this dude is actually fresh. This dude might be prepackaged. And if that is something that excels in people's mind, that might take a huge hit on your margins because people would not want to pay equal amount of money. And on the pure quantum of what you will sell. Because then you are better off competing on shelf space in the supermarkets rather than shelf space with fresh food. That is my one of the concerns that I can come up with.
I have a solution to that because a lot of restaurants, they don't make you butter chicken fresh. They will probably be reheating whatever curry and all that they have also made earlier in the day. It's not that you order a butter chicken and then they start the preparation. Things are already pre-prepared. Otherwise, they can't get you your butter chicken in 15 minutes. So there is that side of things as well. But I don't know how much that happens in other cuisines. I know for a fact with Indian cuisine, because it takes so much time to cook, you do have that level of pre-preparation.
Yeah, my mom makes 7 days tadka on the weekend. And then that tadka is used for the next.
Let me just butt in on that. Again, I should not be saying certain industry secrets, but it's okay. People nowadays know it. Okay, so let's say you walk into an Oberoi or let's say you walk into a Taj and you're attending someone's wedding. And the food is amazing, right? You know, people have paid, let's say whoever the organizer has paid about 2,200 plus taxes for that one plate of amazing good quality food. Do you really think that the dal makhani that you're having or the XYZ other product that you're having is really made fresh that day itself?
Anish, I'll just butt in over here. Let's not take the conversation from a more attacking perspective.
No. I'm not talking about attacking. I'm talking from a positioning perspective over here. What I'm trying to say basically is the question that you asked is a very relevant question. And this has been something which had been bothering me for some time, right? But the answer to this is how we position ourselves. Of course, aisa problem ho sakta hai that kisi ne pooch liya ki are bhai aapka product to fresh nahi hai, right? But we are not saying that we are a fresh food brand. But apne ye bhi nahi bol rahe ki hum aapko package khana de rahe. So that is where we saying that we are giving you gourmet food. Yaha pe factors of how are we preserving the nutritional and the organoleptic properties of food is coming in. It is much more nutritious than what is prepared in an a la minute moment. That is where our food science and our food technology actually kicks in. And that is what will help us position our brand better.
If that is the factor that a packaged food is not as good as maybe a cooked food or a la minute cooked food, as Anish was saying, try a food, try the kind of experience that you're getting. And if there are complaints in terms of maybe a packaged food, or if you understand that this is a packaged food and this is not fresh food, then that's a loss from our side, right? So if we want to position ourselves as a affordable gourmet food, we need to deliver that experience also, right? That's like the base of everything. So agar jab tak wo nahi karenge, tab tak growth in itself or sustainability in itself just goes out of the question, right? So my answer to these questions, and it's also been the answer in the calls that we take with investors or with when we explain it to other people, is please go ahead and try our food for once. There's a reason, and see, I'm sounding brattish again, but there's a reason why we have a rating of 4.5, 4.6 on Swiggy, right? There's a reason why we are trending or we have such good reviews from our customers, Right. I'm not saying that everybody loves the food. There are that our customer who will give us that one star, who will not like the taste that we're providing, or maybe there's some issue with the packaging, etc. But having said that, majority of them do like our food.
I'll take an example of, okay, so we all are aware about Domino's ka cheeseburst pizzas, right? I think a lot of us love it in India, at least. Then, if you remember, I think it was a year or so back, maybe I don't remember correctly, but there was this entire propaganda and this entire video on how, you know, Domino's is said to not be using real cheese in their cheeseburst pizza, right? Did it not affect their sales? Did it not affect their consumer perception?
The opinion goes this way. When I consume Domino's, so I used to be very fat. I'm still fat, but I used to be very fat. I used to be like 170 kilos. So I used to be huge. I could eat you guys up.
Hey, that's a bit difficult to believe.
But when I call out to these foods, to pizzas, burgers, and in Hindi we call it gand, that I am eating gand. In English we call it trash. I am eating trash, right? When I'm ordering Domino's, I'm eating trash food. When I'm ordering Pizza Hut, I'm eating trash food. When I'm ordering McDonald's, KFC, trash food. You are positioning yourself as healthy and tasty food, which becomes a whole other segment of consumer education. We are healthy. So Domino's is not what we compete with. If we are healthy, we compete with one of the mom and pop shops, which are making fresh food for me, which by definition, I believe fresher food, home food is healthy. So what can we do, assuming your product is amazing and healthy and does not need to be fresh to be healthy? How would we educate the people that consume us for healthy and good food, not to consume us as Domino's and if they have fake cheese, or if Subway doesn't use tuna in their fish? Or these brands don't care. These brands are not responsible for people's health. They are responsible for fun.
You know, something which comes to my mind, okay, so two things actually come to my mind. Ek to hai ki apne kaun sa category mein deal kar rahe hain, category ka generalized perception kya hai, right? So the category in which we are dealing with is called BWS, or burgers, wraps and sandwiches, okay? General perception of this category, bhi ye to category healthy hai nahi. Okay, this is not, you know, burger can't be healthy. Sandwich, you know, has carbs and, you know, can't be healthy, right? That is a general perception of this category. Now there are two ways to look at it. Either we go with the tide and we are saying, okay, we are building in this category, bhai, healthy to hai nahi, but ye category bikta hai. And the other way is you position yourself to be a healthy brand. Now, as I was talking about that consumer survey and immersions that we had done, we had seen a huge latent demand for this particular category of affordable healthy meals. Again, because there has been a shift in consumer trends, especially after the entire COVID scenario had happened. The brand which we are building right now is a cloud brand, is a ghost brand, right? It is for getting reviews from consumers and getting early iterations and feedback as well. So our positioning is not that we are a healthy brand. Okay. We're not calling ourselves out to be healthy. Though if you look at our operating systems in the back end, we use much lesser oil. We don't use preservatives, and all of that is there. But again, when we are positioning ourselves in this category in the current context, we're not calling it out to the world that, hey, you know what, we're a healthy brand. But does that mean that we can't build a brand within the healthy category? Of course, there is latent demand, and probably we'll come to that problem later, but that's a different brand altogether.
So I think that's where somewhere the messaging was a little confused. I think at least for me, in my head it was. Where for me, this, where you've clarified this now by saying that yes, we are in the burgers, wraps and sandwiches category. I was not aware of this. This was something that sort of, I think, that got slipped between the lines, because there was this thing that, you know, you guys are selling, you're a QSR who is doing more nutritional food and providing an enhanced experience. So we didn't, and I think the more nutritional led to the, oh yes, you are a brand who's providing fresh and healthy food. And that's where all these questions have stemmed from. I think this is a rabbit hole that we can probably talk for hours about. So just a couple of points. What is food tech? What is the food tech that y'all have implemented? Because you say that your food tech and your processes are what lead to the enhanced experience. So what are those processes? Can you tell me three things about those processes that differentiate you from others?
Okay, so what is food tech? I'll come to that first. So what we believe and what it should be also is, okay, so aaj ke zamane mein, when Swiggy started off, when Zomato started, I'm talking about back in 2015, 2016, when the entire e-commerce boom for aggregators started happening, they were called food tech companies. But at its core, are they food tech companies? They are software companies. They are logistic companies, right? If I really have to think about a food tech company, I would talk about a company which goes into the whys and hows of how food is made and why certain changes happen and when they happen and how they happen. So that is our definition of food technology. We go into the chemistry of making food. We go into the science of making food and understanding why certain changes happen in food.
And we look forward to more science on our show. But I was going to address Nidhir and ask him to break down both of your roles. And it is very clear that you are the food mad scientist fellow in the show who is trying to prepare the best food for everybody. And he's so high energy and he's like, love it. But the more deeper we get into food science, the more off our people are going to start getting. So let's break down the roles that you guys have at the company. And I would love to address Nidhir to take over and like take over the roles that both of you are fulfilling.
Perfect. So as you mentioned, right, Anish is the head behind the entire food and the kind of recipes that we do and the kind of vision that we have. My role in a very brief sentence is to just ask the question why, right? So there are situations wherein, because he's a food purist and he comes from that background, there are situations when he would get carried away. He would try to incorporate the best of things when it comes to food, when it comes to the kind of technology that we're using and the kind of SOP that he's using. My role over there is just to ask the right relevant question, to be very honest, right? So currently, because it's a very small setup, it's a lot of ideations that we do. So that is where we both work together. But the brains behind the entire thing is Anish, to be very honest. And the person who becomes the sane mind or the rational questioner over there is me, right? So if he comes to me and tells me that I want a sous vide machine costing 50 lakh rupees, my first question would be, why can't we do it at 5 lakh rupees, right? So, and that's where the entire argument or the entire debate would happen between us. He would be like, I want to achieve these things because of which I require this. My question would be, why can't you achieve it with this machine, which is 5 to 7 lakhs or 8 lakhs or a 10 lakh machine? What would be the difference that the end consumer will want to feel, right? So, and what is the kind of difference that this particular thing or this particular idea would bring in terms of consumer experience? So that's briefly the role. If you wanted more from a formal sense, so Anish looks after the entire kitchen, the operations of it, and he also takes care of the entire growth planning and marketing planning. I look at the entire backend operations. So finance, your supply chain, your procurement, your admin, IT, etc. currently sits under me, right? So that's basically the broad framework of what both of us are doing.
No, I think Nidhir, again, you're being too humble here. See, one thing which I think all of us will agree on, that in India, there have been only 3-4 brands who've been able to scale, right? Like, aap Rebel Foods ke example le lo, Domino's, bahut hi kam brands hai jo scale kar paaye. And ye scale na sirf khana ka quality ke liye nahi hua, sirf khana ka technology and all that ke liye nahi hua. It takes a lot of brains to build a sustainable business model and to build a business model which is not only growing, but it's also generating money, right? And Nidhir expertises in that. Uska sara, Nidhir can talk the entire night about, you know, whatever he's done in life before. But if you look at how Nidhir has been in his previous roles as well, all his work has been to grow businesses in a sustainable manner, to scale businesses in a sustainable manner. Right? And you need very specific skill sets for that to happen. Right? You just can't say out of the blue that I know how to scale a business sustainably, but, you know, and end up doing it. If you can, that's great. So Nidhir comes in as a very, very key element over there that, sure, you've got technology, sure, you've got great food, but how do we maintain the economics of that business and to make it grow as well as make it sustain in the long term?
That's why we gel together, mutual admiration for each other.
Yeah, I think it's lovely.
Coupled with a lot of humbleness.
Nidhir picks up for Anish.
I was going to say, this is reminding me of the movie Oppenheimer. One is Oppenheimer, one is General Groves. One is the mad scientist, one is the person, you tell me what you need to make happen, let's find a better way to make it happen.
Let's break sustainability. Let's go crazy. What if me and Vishrut, what if we are investors and we give you like 15 CR? What will you do? How will you expand? What do you need?
Okay, so there are a number of ways to go about it. But our focus in terms of sustainability, keeping sustainability in mind, would be to first make Calcutta profitable, right? So you need to make sure that you prove to your customers and to your investors that you are able to build a brand which generates money and which is able to do business on its own, right? So we've seen many of the businesses, like, for just to give you a very small example, 2023, we just had one unicorn being made in India, right? As compared to, if you look at previous years, you had 50 plus, 100 plus unicorns being made in India, right? Zepto is the only unicorn that has been unicorn of 2023. There's a reason behind that investors are looking at more from a sustainable perspective. The previous fundings are not available and people are not able to generate money out of the idea, right? So coming back to the question that you asked, so 15 crores, we would first like to focus on generating money, making Calcutta self-sustainable in terms of being able to, at least operationally, be able to run itself in a BAU perspective. And then you go gungo and you go into the bigger markets, right? Calcutta in itself, when you compare it with markets like Bangalore, Delhi, Bombay, it's a much smaller market, but it's also a much difficult market to crack because people have their own very strong perceptions when it comes to food, right? So if we are able to crack ourselves over here and be sustainable in that perspective, it just makes our life much more easier in order to launch in the other cities that we mentioned. So yeah, the initial would be to make sure that Calcutta is making money, is doing a lot of business. Second would be to go gungo, launch a brand in these particular cities that I just mentioned, and start making money out of it, right? It should not be that consumer comes first or the investor comes first or maybe the co-founders come first, right? It has to be an inclusive environment wherein the right relevant questions are being asked and it becomes a beneficial prospect for every stakeholder that is involved, right? And that comes with believing in the idea and also asking the right questions. So that's basically what we would do with that 15 crore.
I'm originally from Panipat and it meant the world to us when Karnal got McDonald's. So Karnal is a city which is just 30 minutes away from Panipat. And it meant even more to us when Panipat got McDonald's or Domino's. And we used to say it with pride that, you know, we have Domino's now. And people don't think about how much it means to smaller cities. So hopefully in the future, you're also able to cater to much, much smaller cities and you can mean the world to them as time goes forward.
No, that is, that actually brings back a memory. So, you know, while we were formulating this entire plan on, you know, what do we launch and where do we launch, what's the sequence of launch that we have, right? Because our vision is to have 800 partner pods in the next 3.5 years in 11 top geographies. And these geographies have been very carefully curated. If you see from a business standpoint, sure, these geographies, they cater to 95% of the overall orders that is generated in an online segment. We are an online first brand, at least for the first three to four years. We are an online first brand. Uske baad mein kya hoga, we'll look at the vision after that. But for all of the marquee brands, if you would see, and if I break down India into tier 1, tier 2, tier 3 simply, but if I look at a different angle of breaking India down, a lot of behavioral patterns start emerging, wherein people from, let's say, or the population of a tier 3 or a tier 2 or a smaller town has certain aspirational values. And these aspirational values is what is driven from what comes in into a tier 1 city. So, for instance, same when I'm from Kolkata, and when KFC first came into Kolkata and I was a child, I was blown, okay? I was like, dude, this is crazy. When I was watching TV, I was like, KFC came, this was crazy. Why? because I had an aspirational value. So we feel that we should be expanding into a T2, T3 or a slightly smaller town only when we are able to build a brand which is able to generate an aspirational value in the minds of a consumer. So that is where we'll start actually making value and creating value for our consumers as well. And what Nidhar was saying, you know, that from a sustainability perspective, we want to care for the environment. Now I'll just talk a bit on that, wherein we look at a business not okay. So many examples hai apne dimag mein, wherein a startup starts scaling and there are so many moving parts growing so fast that things become haywire. Teams actually start becoming blockers for each other. Investor ka kuch alag hi dimag mein hai, founders ka कुछ अलग ही चल रहा है, ग्रोथ टीम कुछ और ही बोल रहा है, प्रोडक्ट टीम कुछ और ही बोल रहा है, उसमें सेल्स टीम आके कुछ और ही बेच दिया. इट बिकम्स अ लॉट ऑफ कंफ्यूजन, राइट? एंड बिकॉज वी हैव सीन स्टार्टअप्स, वी हैव बीन अ पार्ट ऑफ स्टार्टअप एंड यू नो फ्रॉम अ वेरी अर्ली स्टेज टू अ वेरी हाई ग्रोथ फेज, वी हैव फेस्ड दीज प्रॉब्लम्स. द बिजनेस विच वी आर बिल्डिंग, एटलीस्ट दैट्स वेयर आर अ लॉट ऑफ आर टाइम एंड एफर्ट गोज, इज बिल्डिंग अ फ्रेमवर्क विच वी कॉल एन ERS फ्रेमवर्क, विच इज एन एनवायरमेंट रिक्वायरमेंट सोल्यूशन, वेर इन वी आइसोलेट individual departments and what are their goals, what are their attributes, and to ensure that these departments talk to each other in harmony and they are in sync with each other. And these departments are not as simple as, you know, koi DevOps department hai ya fir koi sales hai. It talks about the overall environment. So at the core of the environment are our users, and we imagine it to be something like how nature is designed. So at your core you have your users, which are your merchants and your consumers. Around your core, you build your solutions. Around the solutions, you build your business and your marketing plans. And around that is where your founders lie and your investors lie. But it all emanates from that one core. And then we further break these down into pods, right? What does this department want? What does that department want? And try to harmonize the requirements. So whenever we're talking about goals, whenever we're talking about targets, that's how we imagine. So that's how we want to build a sustainable business at an overarching level. How we invest the money is the latter part of it, wherein we've got the growth roadmap and the capital expenditure roadmap, which is the, I would not say the easier part to do, but which is the one level down. But the hierarchy should be made in a way that there is synchronicity across the environment.
Anish, where do we find you? Where can I go if I want to order?
I'm based out of Kolkata right now.
No, sorry, I meant, where can we find BTR Kitchen? Kahan se order kar sakte hain?
Haan, so that's what, like, you're based out of Kolkata right now. So, if you search for griddles on Swiggy or Zomato, to aapko mil jayega, kahin pe bhi.
Anish, like, I am in Kolkata right now. You can find me here in my house. I'm recording with you. What are you going to ask?
I'm sorry, bro.
I guess I mistook that question, but yeah, what it also means that you're based out of Kolkata, so you'll be able to find us on Swiggy and Zomato, and because Swiggy and Zomato allows super long distance and search based delivery, irrespective of wherever you are, you should be able to locate us. So you search for griddles on Swiggy and Zomato, you should be able to find it. Yeah, that's a consumer facing brand. Yeah.
Chalo, so with that, I think we're going to bring the episode to a close. We have a tradition on our podcast where the previous founder has left a question behind for you guys, and to answer that and leave a question for the next founder. The question is, if given an opportunity to change something in your business, what will that be?
I mean, we're at a very, very early stage, and I mean, to be very honest, at least one thing which comes on top of my mind is, how do I answer that question? I mean, Nidhar might have a different point of view over here, but at this stage, if I don't have conviction in what we are building and I immediately want to change at a phase where my entire point is to get iterative feedback, then that is a fundamental problem. So, maybe this question would have been more relevant for me to answer if we were 1 year down the line, but it's been only 3 to 4 months. Nidhar, anything that comes to your mind?
Let's change the question a little bit then. What is the one thing you would change in your industry?
What is one thing that I would change in my industry is the culture. The culture and the pay scale.
I would like to change about the industry is the perception that it's a, like
the whole discussion was around the point that preserved versus fresh. So that perception is something that I would like to change. That it doesn't matter. Right. As long as you get good food, good quality, etc., it doesn't matter. Right. So that is one thing that I would like to change.